Hello, and welcome to the Og Blog Podcast, the world's leading semi-retired podcast for fans of Peanuts books and the works of Charles M. Schulz. There hasn't been a new episode in years, but when I retired the podcast, I allowed that I might bring it back if there's anything that called for it, and I think this is it. Who I've got for you today is Benjamin L. Clark, who is the current curator of the Charles M. Schulz Museum in lovely Santa Rosa, California. Mr. Clark, who is lovely himself, is my co-writer on the upcoming book, Charles M. Schulz, The Art and Life of the Peanuts Creator in 100 Objects. We wrote this book with the help of many hands, including dozens of members of the Schulz family, fellow cartoonists and celebrities who chipped in their pieces to this glorious tome. And actually, technically, the book was written by him, me, and the museum itself, an impressive edifice. But the book was completed before Benjamin and I had ever met. Those of you who were at the San Diego Comic-Con this year got to see him and I together as we told you about some Peanuts educational film strips, and that's basically when we met. But he seems to be a good folk, and I'm glad to be talking to him. How you doing, sir?
I'm great. It's good to be on the out of retirement for the moment blog podcast again.
Good to have you. So, all right, you're the curator there at the Schulz Museum, and we've got some people listening who knows a curator is a museum somebody, but exactly what is it that you do?
Well, I oversee the care of all the old stuff. Mm-hmm. I also oversee everything going on in the galleries. And here, that also means I'm the guy who writes all the words you read on the wall. So, and doing the research for that too. So that's what I do here.
Very important stuff.
Yeah.
Very important stuff. You got some significant stuff there. So where do you come from? What is your background? Who are you?
Well, I grew up in Nebraska and bounced around, post high school and got a degree in history and another one in museum studies, and then went into museum work in about 2003. And so I've been in museums since, and I've been here now for almost 5 years here at the Schulz Museum. So It's been good.
It's been good. What museums were you at before this? I'm curious.
Gracious. I worked for a World War II aviation museum in Texas. I worked for the Oklahoma Historical Society. I worked for as the director of a small arts and history organization in Montana. And I was also the curator for Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska. So I think that's about everything.
That's quite a list. Seen a lot of places. Although I'm curious, now I'll assume that since your bosses may be hearing this, that the Schulz Museum is absolutely your top pick, exactly the exact place you want to be.
Even if they don't listen, this is definitely it.
But what would be the second dream? If you could pick any museum in the world to do your job at, what would it be?
I have no idea. It'd be something that's imaginary. I don't think it exists, frankly. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, it'd be hard to match how much fun we get to have here working in comics. You know, it's a fun subject. It's a meaningful subject, but you know, it's not quite as heavy as taking home the stories of World War II vets at night. You know,
that's true. I should imagine not. The stuff you're doing is, Peanuts is definitely very important in the comics realm, in the cultural realm.
Yeah.
So you're doing work of significance, but it's also a funny strip, you know. Yeah. So that's does sound like a very, very good place to be.
Yeah.
What's your Peanuts background? I mean, I assume you heard of Peanuts before this job was opened up.
Yes. So, you know, growing up in Nebraska and, mostly, in the 80s, I was of the age where Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side are appearing, they're just becoming these juggernauts of the comic pages, and you didn't dare miss it on my playground, at least growing up. And so so I read the comics as daily as I could. We didn't get the paper at home, so my dad would bring it home from the office, and then we got it on Sundays usually at home. So I was very well acquainted with Peanuts. And then we had some of the, paperback collections like nearly every household in America probably does. And we actually even had some of the Young Pillars. We had maybe one of those.
The works you did for the Church of God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There were several collections of those along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was already familiar with that too. So yeah, that's kind of my Peanuts background. I mean, it's not, you know, it was the strip, you know, my grandma would clip and mail to me and write my name on one of the characters, and, you know, which is, you know, it's like every, you know, pretty much anybody.
Yeah. Know, oh, well, yeah. Peanuts is so much, it has been so much part of the atmosphere of American culture for the past 70, whatever years. Yeah. I would be utterly shocked to talk to somebody of reasonable age who hadn't had some bit of Peanuts in their life.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I had the crank snow cone machine, and, you know, it's all there.
So cool. Cool. You're in charge of all the archives, all the old stuff.
Yep.
There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, there is. We have nearly 8,000 original strips, you know, drawn by Schultz.
Mm-hmm. So that's close to half the run.
Almost half. And, you know, that's by far, you know, the most of any anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We have, gosh, tens of thousands of other personal artifacts of Mr. Schultz's, and also his, you know, his other art that he had. You know, he collected original comic art from some of his heroes, some of his art colleagues from art instruction. So we have some gorgeous wildlife paintings, you know, from Walter Wilwerding, who was an art instruction teacher there, and the guy who originally designed the Greyhound bus logo, that's him.
Ooh.
He also did some gorgeous covers for, you know, Outdoor Life magazine, you know, oil paintings and just things like that. So, I mean, we have all kinds of stuff. And of course, our archives, which, you know, hundreds of thousands of documents and audiovisual materials and books and posters and sandwich bags and Valentines and who knows about anything you could imagine. We've got it.
Yeah, a barber pole.
Yes, we have the barber pole. We have the barber pole from the family barbershop. Yeah.
Yeah. That is and the things that we're covering for the book, that was my sort of, well, this is one of the things you wouldn't expect. You wouldn't really think about, but yes, it's a very symbolic item in its own way.
Just, I mean, yeah, I think I remember the day I saw it, like the first time, and it had been elsewhere and it had come back to us, and it was on a shelf down in the collection manager's area. And I saw it, and it immediately registered what it had to be. And it was just like, oh my God, I didn't even know we had it. And, you know, it's just like, is that really the barber pole from the barber shops? Like, wow. It's like, how did we get it? You know, where did it come from? So it turns out, you know, one of the Schultz children had been back to St. Paul and had acquired it from the building owners, and which, good thing, you know, that building was torn down, you know, not too long ago. So
good to get it.
Now it's, yeah, it's gone.
That's a good capture. Absolutely. That's one thing about history, is when you're working with historic stuff, you sometimes have to pay attention. It's not always going to be there. You know, right. you get what you can when you can. I've often been encouraging, you know, I write some books on comics history, and I've often been encouraging people who do interviews to, you know, seek out these people who were there and knew things, because these people aren't always going to be there. And that knowledge, that insight, you know, is always going to be lost if you can't grab it quickly enough.
Yeah.
So that is good. Well, let's move on to the book, because the barber pole is one of the 100 objects mentioned in the title of the book. As I say, it's Charles M. Schultz, The Art and Life. Art and Life? Yes, that order. Yes, I think so. The Art and Life of the Peanuts Creator in 100 Objects. We were just calling it Schultz 100 Objects because that saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, this book, people should see it. People should buy copies of it. And when it's coming out in November, it's basically 102-page spreads, each built around a single object. There's more than just one photo there. We show a lot of other things from the archives. I didn't count how many photos we have altogether, but we have a lot of stuff. But we always start for each spread with one object we want to talk about, and we do some history on it, and we use reflection, and we put them in a biographical order. So we're sort of building a Schultz biography through this. Now, right. I was brought into the project relatively late. When I was brought in, the 100 objects were already selected. We did a little fudging around after that, but so you were the primary selector there, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So when we we had talked about doing an evergreen catalog for the museum as a, you know, as something that people could take home with them after they've made the journey here and remember their time here. And it was kind of an idea we had floating around. And then as we talked about ideas for the centennial, how do we observe and celebrate and things, it's kind of like, well, hey, what about that museum catalog kind of idea? It's like, what if we marry these two things together and we would already have a format, you know, be, you know, it's 100 years, let's do 100 objects. We easily have that many objects in the museum. So let's just pick some out. And so that was kind of why it's 100 and for the centennial. And yeah, so when everybody kind of was signing off on that concept, they said, okay, well, what are we going to show? I'm like, oh, okay, well, I better have a list. And so, you know, you sit down and, you know, I'm familiar enough with the collection and things here that, you know, some things were just completely obvious. You know, we have to have the barber pole. We have to have, you know, certain other objects. Made that, you know, pretty easy, you know, to make on that list.
Yeah, I should imagine there's also, you know, you want a lot of the objects to be art because that's a good thing to have in a book. And definitely if you want to explain Charles Schulz, his art is where it's at.
Definitely. And we also, you know, as we talked about the concept and things, it became clear that, you know, there were some objects that, or some things about his life we wanted to talk about, but there really wasn't a physical object to talk about it necessarily. So we kind of had to get a little creative and dig around a little bit more, you know, in our archives and collections, which helped us not do the obvious things and bring some surprising objects in. You know, one of those things that kind of came about was the postcard, you know, which announces Schulz's birth. You know, it was something I had read about in one of the biographies on Schulz that, you know, his dad mailed a postcard to the relatives to announce, you know, hey, the healthy baby boy. And I thought it'd probably come from an interview. I had no idea that we actually owned the actual postcard that Schulz's father mailed the day after he was born, you know, to tell Dina's family that, you know, she's okay and baby's here and we'll see you soon. And I just could not believe it. And of course, you know, a book celebrating 100 years of since his birth, you want to have it has to go in.
You got to have some way to an object for birth, and that that made a wonderful one. Part of my work was making sure we sort of covered the biography through that, and having that there, that made life easier. And I appreciate anything that makes my life easier. So, yeah, I'm sometimes trying to describe to people, you know, my part involved in this book. It's like it's this big cake and you made the cake and I just came in and did the frosting.
Right. Well, that's very generous. Thank you.
Well, and there were a lot of other people having their inputs, and there were a lot of other people. Yeah. Shape of the cake changed a little bit while we were frosting it.
Yeah.
Just so people know, I did most of the text. I took the objects and then what descriptions I had, try to make good text about it, you know, added some research and things like that. But a lot of people at the museum, Jeannie Schulz had a real hand in it. You know, there was a lot of people trying to make this a good book, occasionally with some disagreements as to what that meant. But, you know, that's the nature of a team project.
Yep. Absolutely. It was not too dissimilar from how we, you know, how exhibitions come together. And this object says this, and it's like, well, are you sure? You know, it might say that, or maybe this other thing says that better. And you know, it was great though. It was really fun for me. And you know, I've never worked on anything quite like that before, so it was educational for me.
Is this your first author credit, book wise? At least book wise.
Basically, yeah. Okay. I've published some things here and there, but not quite like this. No.
So, this is a full blown hardcover, full color, general release item of a very specialty, specialty interest. I mean, this, you know, as you said, this is something that the museum should be able to move for a long time to come, because to a certain degree, it is a form of the museum in a book. To some degree. Which isn't to say that anybody who gets the book shouldn't go and see the wonderful, wonderful museum and all the wonderful things you have. What are some of what you've got coming up? What are some of the special displays you have coming up?
Oh, gosh. We are very excited for our 2020, end of 22, beginning 23 slate. of exhibitions. Coming up very soon, actually in the month of November, will be in our strip rotation gallery, which focuses on just the original artwork, is an exhibition I've called Dream a Little Dream. So it's all about sleep and dreaming in Peanuts. So we get to see, you know, Schultz explain why Snoopy sleeps on top of his doghouse. And we get to see strips of, you know, Charlie Brown laying awake at night because he can't sleep, because he's, you know, saying, you know, have you ever, you know, why do I stay, sometimes I stay, lie awake at night and wonder
things. Yes.
We also get to see some archival letters from sleep disorder experts. We're very concerned about Peppermint Patty. And they write to Schultz to say, you know, she should really be in a sleep study. We think she's narcoleptic. and so he eventually relents and says, you know, if I can think of something, maybe I'll do it. And so we have some of the original strips where Peppermint Patty enters a sleep study and we find out if she's a narcoleptic or not. So I'm very excited about that exhibition. Those strip gallery rotations are really fun because they're very minimal for like design and interpretation. So they're very straightforward.
Yeah, if you pick the strip, correct strips, they say something by their grouping, but you just put them strips out, you know, you got them under those lovely glass cabinets.
There's one tiny label that just kind of, you know, I get like one sentence to say what I'm going to say and that's it, you know, and that's hands off. So I like those a lot. They're kind of a fun curatorial challenge, and that's fun. And then our next small gallery upstairs in January is going to be about Paw Pit Theater, Snoopy's other creative endeavor, where he does puppet shows atop his doghouse. And so we'll be jumping into that. So we just opened an exhibition downstairs last month. The big gallery right now is The Spark of Schultz. And it's about Schultz's kind of force as an inspiration through into comics and cartooning and animation and illustrated works of all kinds. You know, that's kind of what it's about.
Well, there was a lot there. I mean, you've got for doing a museum about one person, you have the luck of working on one where he was in a number of realms. His work went into a number of realms. So,
absolutely, yeah. We'll never run out of things to talk about. And then downstairs in the spring. So right now, what I'm actually working on is that, because you know we have to work several months ahead at any given time. And so right now, the big exhibition for spring I'm working on is about kites. It's going to be a lot of fun. Kite flying, kite eating tree. It's just going to be a fun exhibition.
Sounds good. How far ahead are the subjects planned?
Oh, years.
It's gotta be.
I think I've got my slate approved for like through 2025 or something like that. So.
Okay. Makes sense. I mean, that way, you know what to keep your eyes out for, what, you know, figure out what's in the archives and what you might want. What is the holy grail for the archive? What is the thing you don't have that you'd love to have?
Ooh. Just more correspondence. We're always thrilled to get Schultz correspondence, even sometimes very minor letters. He'll throw in a little statement on something. Some topic he's never really talked about before. Maybe he phrased in a particular way that makes it very quotable. Mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah. People should realize that even though, I mean, obviously you got a lot of stuff, the museum got a lot of stuff from his, you know, when he passed and, you know, from his house, you're always accumulating stuff. In fact, while we were working on the book, we had the earliest original art, Peanut strip original art in the collection as an item. And then you got an older one.
Yeah.
So it was a moving target even then, you know, during the months we were working on this book.
It was quite a surprise because the oldest original strip in the collection had been the reigning oldest one for, you know, I don't know how long, forever, 20 years maybe, I don't know, for a long time. So we were very surprised to see it, number one, and number two, just very, very happy to have been able to acquire it. So,
yeah. Yeah. One wonders, I mean, how much of that early stuff is anywhere, much less findable, you know, is, you don't have the first strip, of course. And is that somewhere, is it going to surface someday? We don't know. We, you know, so many pieces of art over the years. And when you're first starting out on a strip, you're not thinking about the museum that you're going to have someday.
No, you're happy. Does anybody even bothers to read it at all? And, you know, it's, and that's the thing too, is this new oldest strip, you know, it wasn't, I mean, we are aware of other collections out there, mm-hmm. and other people have shared their collection. So we kind of know where some strips are that we don't own necessarily, but we know who has them and things. But this one, I mean, just came out of the blue, and they do that sometimes. And so we don't know. Yeah, it was wild. I mean, because nobody had even among the collectors who collect Peanuts original art, nobody seemed to have known it even existed. So yeah, there could be something else out there. We have no idea. Personally, the Holy Grail art for mm-hmm. me is, I'm also a big, I'm also a Sherlock Holmes fan. And I know Schultz did several Sherlock Holmes adaptations that he drew into a notepad.
Yeah, back in his youth.
That
would be lovely.
Full adaptations, and he shared them with Shermie, his buddy who lived kind of across the alley from him. And Shermie is probably the only person who ever saw them, mm-hmm. besides maybe his parents while he was drawing them, and that's it. And they were, if he kept them past his youth, they were probably destroyed in a fire at his apartment building, where he and his dad lived right after the war. There was a fire in the basement. He lost all of his comic collection and
all those Big Little books gone.
Yep. So I imagine if he still had it, it was probably there. But you know, it's, things turn up. You never know.
Yeah. There are surprises. So, the book came out to be quite a document. I'm looking forward to finally seeing a copy in print. I haven't seen the actual produced book yet. I've got the PDFs and all that from production, but
yeah. Oh, I have one.
You have one. You have an actual physical book. So it has left the printer. Okay.
Yes.
So
a copy did show up here.
Okay. All right. That is good to know. If the world ends tomorrow, you had a copy. That's very good.
I had one.
And I'm trying to think what anything else you'd like to say about the book. I am underprepared with questions.
Oh, gracious. We're just thrilled that it turned out as well as it did, and appreciate your hard work on it too. And it's bringing your background and expertise as a professional Peanuts nerd for many years to the project, because it was really helpful to not have to catch somebody up on mm-hmm. some, you know, Schultz's biography and to be able to jump into the project.
Thank you. But yeah, it was good. It was a good product to be the text monkey on. We also got a lot of people. One of the weird things is we were reaching out for quotes, little stories from all these cartoonists and from people like Al Roker and Billie Jean King, who knew Schultz. And you know, I reached out to Gary Berghoff, who it was the original Charlie Brown in Your Good Man Charlie Brown, and things like that. So we got some stories, we got some people's reflections. But whenever we reached out to a cartoonist, it was either going to be talking about the pen nibs or the desk. They all wanted to talk about the pen nibs or the desk, because they're cartoonists. That's
yeah, it's funny. It's what they dream of.
Well, great. So the book is going to be available in November through your usual sources, including your favorite bookstores. If your favorite bookstore doesn't have it in stock, they'll special order it for you. But they're also being sold by the Schultz Museum. And in fact, if you pre-order a copy, which hopefully this recording will go up in time for people to hear it and say, I want to pre-order a copy, you can get it signed by Gene Schultz, Sparky's widow, who had definitely had a hand in this book. She cares about this stuff. She cares about how this gets presented. And she showed that repeatedly. There is that. There is an event November 12th at the Schultz Museum that you'd have to buy tickets for soon. And that's going to have Al Roker talking with several cartoonists who contributed to the book, talking about Sparky. And if you buy a ticket for that, it's a $60 ticket, but it includes the $50 book. So, you know, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's going to be a really a big deal here at the Schultz Museum to have that and have Al Roker here. And so many other of the cartooning contributors.
Yeah, I should have pulled up the list. I'm sorry. I didn't think, but yeah, some good folks there. Kathy Geiswhite will be there.
Yep, Patrick McDonald will be here.
Folks like that. So, you know, it'll should be an interesting conversation.
Absolutely. And these are, I mean, they're all people who knew him. I mean, they all knew him, even Al Roker. So he did one of the last interviews.
Yeah.
With Schultz,
yeah. Well, Schultz was really glad to get to know cartoonists. I mean, he would go out to the National Cartoonist Society meetings and he would talk to the newbies and all that kind of stuff. You talk to any cartoonist who's cartooning then and they'll have that story. They'll tell you about that. And how quickly he made them feel like they were talking to a peer rather than to the great old wise man of the field.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm a lousy interviewer. Are there any? I am. It's not my nature. It's not my spirit. Are there any questions I should have asked you that I did not?
No, I don't think so. I think you got it covered. You did great.
All right. Well, I guess I need to wrap this up anyway, because we're doing this by Zoom call and I haven't paid the extra bucks to allow me to Zoom for more than 40 minutes at a time. So I will thank you. Thank you so much for being on this. Thank you so much for working with me, for supporting me on my involvement in this project and for doing such good work on it yourself, such attentive work. You. And hopefully a lot of people will like the book. I expect they will.
Yeah. I hope so.
All right. Talk to you soon. Take care, sir.
Yep. Thanks. Thanks, Dan.
I am so glad that Benjamin was able to spare some time for that interview. One thing that I should follow up with is the lineup for that November 12th event at the Schultz Museum. As we said, Al Roker is going to be leading a panel of cartoonists who knew Schultz. And as we mentioned, that includes Kathy Geiswhite, creator of the comic strip Kathy, and Patrick McDonald, creator of Mutt. But also on the panel will be Stefan Pastis of Pearls Before Swine fame, and Jumpstart creator Rob Armstrong. I got to talk to Rob and his lovely wife Crystal at Harriet Glickman's memorial. They seem like quite nice folks. Anyway, if you want to get a ticket for that, head on over to schultzmuseum.org and see if they're still available. Certainly if it's after November 12th, it's too late. But until then, space is limited, tickets are necessary, but see what you can get. And that's it for this surprise episode of the Aug Blog Podcast. Don't expect another episode next week. I'm not sure if I'll ever do one again, but I think it's good to keep the option open. But until we get a chance to talk again, may all your Thompsons stay out of trouble, may all your sugar cubes have honey on them, and may all your griefs be good ones.